The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
32 years ago today, that's when the 20th century's foremost television evangelist, Herbert W. Armstrong, he died at the age of 93. It's incredible to think about the massive impact that this man had on the United States, on the entire world, in fact. It's also incredible that you hear almost nothing about this man today, unless you happen to read our publications or listen to our broadcasts. But the impact that this one individual had on the world. If you've been reading the Trumpet for very long, you know all about Herbert Armstrong. You know all about that voice, that clip I just played for you. You know about that voice. And if you know anything about the work that God did through that man, how could you deny that this man was sent from God, that he was one of the most prominent, I mean, just looking at it in terms of history and the impact that people have had on the world, as I say, how could you deny that this was one of the most prominent religious figures of our time? He was more than a TV evangelist, of course. He was an unofficial ambassador for world peace, a man who met with more world leaders in their private offices than any other ambassador, diplomat, or world leader. Herbert Armstrong. He was the first religious leader invited to speak in China after the Cultural Revolution. And then when he died, presidents, kings, prime ministers alike, all of them mourned the loss of this great man and this ambassador for peace, this leader in pursuit of world peace. All kinds of cards and well wishes just streaming into Pasadena following his death on January 16th, 1986. Many remember Mr. Armstrong's popular television program, The World Tomorrow. Before that, it was a radio show reaching millions of people around the world. Nearly 400 stations, TV stations, that he was on there in the mid-1980s. And that's more popular than any other program at the time. He wrote dozens and dozens of books and booklets, I suppose hundreds if you count the big articles. Numerous books. If you look at the peak of God's work right there in the last few years of his life, from 1980 to 1984, the church distributed 361 million books, booklets, magazines, newspapers, Bible lessons, letters. 361 million. Many, again, are familiar with the plain truth. Circulation of 8 million every month, produced in 7 languages. That one magazine had a higher circulation than Time and Newsweek combined. How about that? I mean, that was back when Time and Newsweek were popular. That was during the peak popularity of Time and Newsweek. And you had the plain truth outpacing both of them combined. Well, then, when Mr. Armstrong died, January 16th, 1986, 32 years ago, things changed dramatically in the Worldwide Church of God. The plain truth, for example, its circulation plummeted. when it started producing articles that were no longer plain or true, for that matter. I mean, here his teachings had been enjoyed, studied by millions upon millions of people for decades. And yet those he trusted most, his top lieutenants, the very people who succeeded him in the leadership of the Worldwide Church of God, they repudiated his teachings. They ridiculed that man's life. They ridiculed all of his programs. Well, after the death, we recount this in Raising the Ruins, but the work that God built through this man, it just fell apart, and it happened so fast. Just 10 years after Mr. Armstrong died, this is in 1996, the pastor general at the time for the Worldwide Church of God, Joe DeCotch Jr., he wrote in The Plain Truth that we have much to repent of and apologize for. He's speaking on behalf of that legacy. He's speaking on behalf of the Worldwide Church of God. And in so doing, he described Mr. Armstrong's teachings as judgmental and self-righteous. Judgmental and self-righteous. That's not the man I remember or studied. That's not the man that millions of people listen to on the World Tomorrow program each week. It's not the man who wrote such dynamic articles for The Plain Truth, or the one that dozens and dozens of world leaders around the world were so proud of, proud to call him their friend. 32 years, and here we are at the trumpet, or on KPCG, and we can proudly say that we're following in the footsteps of Herbert W. Armstrong. We're declaring the truths that God restored through him, proclaiming the prophetic warning that he delivered for so many decades. We honor his legacy. We honor the incredible work that God did through him. And so you see, anywhere you look in this work, you see a very similar pattern as was established during the days of Mr. Armstrong. You can take our Trumpet magazine, these radio programs, the television videos that we produce. I mean, the technology has improved and changed over the years, but the message is the same. The message is the same. And the pattern is the same. My father made a point a few months ago in the Royal Vision magazine. I brought this out in class the other day. But he said in the July issue last year, this is July, August, 2017, he said, "I have realized that every time I honor Mr. Armstrong, God honors me." That's a valuable lesson to remember. Every time I honor Mr. Armstrong, God honors me. What a beautiful statement that is. If you look at the work that God did through Mr. Armstrong, if you look at Mr. Armstrong himself, I mean, you can see why God loved him so much. His attitude, you hear it. The dynamic focus and energy that he had, the enthusiasm he had for God's work, for God's word, for God's truth. You can see why God loved him so much and why God honored him. And you can see why, when we honor him, God honors us as well. That's what my father was saying in that Royal Vision. In Raising the Ruins, I just kind of summarized that transition, that dreadful transition from, in so many ways. I mean, obviously, God is raising the ruins. So there's a lot here to talk about that's very positive. But in the early pages of that book, I'm describing here the battle that we had over Mystery of the Ages. Of course, Mr. Armstrong died in 1986. Just to summarize, the Philadelphia Church of God started at the end of 1989, and then Malachi's Message, my father's signature work, it went out first in January, right around January the 16th, 1990. And then 7 years on from that, we printed Mystery of the Ages. Well, as it says here in Raising the Ruins, beginning in 1989, the same God who raised up his church under Mr. Armstrong went to work raising the ruins. By 1997, the scattered remains of those who held to their original faith had grown in number to support an exciting new phase of God's work, reprinting and sending Mr. Armstrong's literature, particularly his masterwork, Mystery of the Ages, to the largest audience possible. It says immediately, the same leadership that cut down Mr. Armstrong came gunning for this resurrected work, promising to bury the facts again, saying it was their Christian duty to keep this book out of print. And then it says finally, a grueling life and death 6-year copyright battle ensued, in which the Worldwide Church of God and the Philadelphia Church of God went head to head over the beliefs outlined in Mystery of the Ages. The history of that amazing case and its wondrous outcome shines as a stark light on what really happened inside the Worldwide Church of God. A grueling, life and death, 6-year copyright battle. You know, that struggle, that lawsuit, the litigation over Mystery of the Ages, for our part, it was all about honoring Mr. Armstrong's legacy. That's the reason why we went to court in the first place. Well, I guess before that, that's the reason why we printed Mystery of the Ages. And then the Worldwide Church of God took us to court because they didn't want Mystery of the Ages to be distributed. They thought it was riddled with errors. Joe DeCotch Jr. admitted that to my father back in 1989. When he fired my father, he admitted that Mystery of the Ages was riddled with errors. Then, as I just read to you, he comes out in 1996 or so and apologizes. He apologizes for Mr. Armstrong, saying that he was judgmental and self-righteous. And then when we try to distribute his literature, his works, his teachings, because we believe, we hold fast to those teachings, then he spearheaded this litigation and came after the Philadelphia Church of God to try to destroy us and to try to bury Mystery of the Ages and all of Mr. Armstrong's works. And yet now, I mean, we've got the benefit of hindsight here. I'm speaking to you in 2018, 32 years on, 15 years on from the conclusion of that 6 years of litigation. And I can certainly tell you the same thing that my father did in that royal vision a few months ago. That God truly does honor us when we honor Mr. Armstrong. The outcome of that court battle shows that more clearly than just about anything else. And the way that it ended, I went through some of that detail the other day. But the way it ended, I mean, in 2002, it came to a head finally at the end of that year, 2002. We were 5 years into this court case and preparing for a damages trial because the appeals court had overturned a victory that we got in the lower level, the district level. And so we were preparing for a damages trial. The Supreme Court refused to hear our case. And so the way the Worldwide Church of God lawyers were looking at it, well, it's a done deal. Now we just got to go to court, and then the Philadelphia Church of God has to pay us all these damages, and we'll make a killing. But the thing is, we had this counterclaim that we filed. We were going after 18 additional works of Mr. Armstrong. So while we had to stop with Mystery of the Ages for a time, distributing it, I mean, we had this counterclaim suing them for the rights to these other 18 works, saying that they had no right in the United States of America to prevent this truth, this written work, or these written works, to prevent them from ever seeing the light of day. That's what they were trying to do. And all through that litigation, of course, we had to put up with their shenanigans, their deceit, their lies. as they would tell one judge after another, as they would say under oath in a deposition. Oh, we've had plans for Mystery of the... What are you talking about? We're burying this literature. We've got big plans. We've considered an annotated version. That's what they said early on. And then, of course, that never happened. I mean, 6 years of litigation. If they say on day one, hey, we've got these plans. I mean, 3, 4, 5 years into the litigation, and we're there saying, how's that annotated copy coming along? How's the annotated version coming? And then one of the things that they were saying repeatedly, I mean, they were just appalled that we could go and just print it. They said, why didn't you ask us? Well, you look in Joe Jr.'s own book. You look in his own book from 1996. He said he had a Christian duty to keep the book from, to keep Mystery of the Ages and the writings of Mr. Armstrong out of print. He had a, not just a duty to bury the truth, to bury that book. He had a Christian duty. He was, I mean, God was backing him, he said. So we didn't ask them. We didn't call them up and say, could we please have Mystery of the Ages or could we please print this? We printed it. And we're prepared to deal with the consequences. And that was a grueling life and death 6-year copyright battle. All through those 6 years, they kept saying, why didn't, look, Your Honor, if the PCG would just be nice and come and submit an offer, you know, you never know. So we did that in March of 2002. We didn't do it with high hopes, but we finally put forward an offer and said, all right, we'll give you such and such for a license to distribute these works. And I mean, their response, they didn't take it seriously. They ridiculed it. They rejected it flat out. This is from April 8th, 2002. Their representative, Matthew Morgan, he sends us a letter rejecting the offer. And then he says, you know, just so you know, we're going to start e-publishing these works. So this is, I mean, this is going to be great for your organization. He says, no need exists to engage in complicated negotiations over the terms of a license. Your church will now be able to purchase as many legal copies of the 19 works as it desires and finds necessary to fulfill all its alleged spiritual needs. I mean, this was our alleged need that we felt like Mystery of the Ages was central to our religion. He went on to say, the WCG is extremely pleased that its decision to publish not only serves as the best means for the church to capitalize. This is the Worldwide Church of God. Now, the Tkach leadership, they're looking to capitalize on their literary copyrighted assets, but also it has the additional benefit of fulfilling your church's alleged, there it is again, alleged spiritual needs as well. So we're going to come out and e-publish these books. Your people can download these works. We don't have to have any complicated negotiations. And then this is a good way for us, too, to capitalize on these literary copyrighted assets. Now, I ask you, which side in these negotiations in early 2002, which side was truly honoring Herbert W. Armstrong? I mean, it sounded pretty good coming from Mr. Morgan there. Yeah, we're going to e-publish everything. You guys will be happy. We'll be happy. We'll make a little money, and then, you know, we'll be done with it. Well, that was the so-called e-publishing plan. And then as we found out a few weeks later, they planned to insert a preface, the infamous preface, as we called it, in front of all of these works. So you could get, let's say, Mystery of the Ages, or you could get The Plain Truth About, or What Do You Mean Born Again, or The Plain Truth About This or That. But it would have this nasty preface in front, 1,500 words, written by Mike Fizell. A preface that basically said Mr. Armstrong was pretty much stupid, and all of his doctrines, his teachings were heretical. He preached heresy. And, oh, here, by the way, is the book that you just bought. It's heresy, and it's by this incompetent, you know, uneducated individual. So that preface, just like that statement in Transformed by Truth, the Christian duty statement, the preface really did breathe life into our litigation, into our fight for Mr. Armstrong's writings. And through it all, as I say, through it all, the fight revolved around honoring Herbert Armstrong. We were the side looking to carry on with his legacy, to honor his memory, his work, his writings, his teachings. And all these so-called plans to annotate or e-publish, they never, ever did happen. It never happened. And the reason for that is because of what Joe Jr. wrote in his book, Transformed by Truth. We've got a Christian duty to keep it out of print. That's what he told a general audience. And then they got into a courtroom and they just lied to the judge and say, yeah, we've got these plans to do this, this, and this with it. And they never did any of it. And then as 2002 wore on and we got closer to the damages trial, their representatives were gloating over the fact that, look, we've won this. I don't know what the PCG or Gerald Fleury keep talking about, that there's still a chance that they can still somehow get all the material. They lost. They lost. Every step along this way, they would say. They were really agitated because my father at the time kept saying, look, God's with us. Somehow we're going to get that material. We're going to win this if we trust God, if we stay through to this right up until the end. So we had all of these intense depositions. This was over the summer of 2002. And I mean, my father said to everyone at headquarters in Edmond, look, let's be prepared to just drop everything so that we can prepare and do our research and get ready for these depositions and show the court reporter and show the lawyers present and show the judges who go through these transcripts or at least hear them discussed in court. Show them the deceit. Show them the way that they went about transforming the church. Show the world, expose their nefarious tactics, their lies and deceit. That made for some pretty intense deposition exchanges because they didn't like being exposed. They didn't like being exposed in those depositions. And in those depositions, they got a bit of a foretaste of what it was going to be like in a courtroom with a jury and with the general public and with the presiding judge and in front of attorneys for both sides. So they started to change their thinking as we got closer to the end of 2002. They were still very confident. Ralph Helge, one of their lead attorneys, he wrote to someone in August of 2002 about the lawsuit. He said, Mr. Fleury has made representations to the PCG members, giving the misimpression that there is still the possibility in the case that the court is going to award PCG the right to pirate Mystery of the Ages. He says, this is simply, again, misinformation. The case has been finally decided and concluded regarding Mystery of the Ages. And Mr. Fleury, out of sheer desperation, has exhausted all legal remedies available to him. Any attempt of PCG to acquire any court-ordered right to print the Mystery of the Ages is over, done, finished. Legally, there is no place else for him to go on this issue. I don't know how else I can say it, he said. PCG's only right is to stand before the bar of justice and have damages assessed against them and attorney's fees for the wrong that it has committed. Of course, the counterclaim was going on at this time. There was a potential appeal of any outcome of the damages trial. There was still a lot that was in play. But he thought, look, we're getting ready for the damages trial. There's no place else for them to go. They're just going to stand before the bar of justice and have damages assessed and pay up. They're going to pay us. Well, here again, my father kept saying, God will figure out a way. You can look at a verse in Habakkuk 3 and verse 2. He brings this out in his booklet, the Habakkuk booklet. But in verse 2 of that third chapter, it talks about the work of God being revived. Revive the work. My father wrote in September 2002, he said, the Philadelphia Church of God has never needed reviving except in the court case. This is a prophecy about God reviving us, so we need to prepare for a spectacular end. Yes, we are going to get Mr. Armstrong's writings. He says, I believe that God will have to give us Mr. Armstrong's writings. I state that in faith, and I strongly believe he will, if we have the faith that we need. That's what he was saying. Even as Ralph Helge was saying, look, I don't know how else I can say it. The PCG's only right is to stand before the bar of justice and to have damages assessed against them and attorney's fees for the wrong that it has committed. And my father, at that same time, same month, October 2002, he says, one way or another, we're going to get Mr. Armstrong's writings. Well, Ralph Helge said later, this was from a newspaper publication in late October. He talked about how the Worldwide Church had overwhelmingly prevailed at all of the court rulings over the years, and that now they were seeking the attorney's fees, the damages, and all of that. And so if it was going swimmingly well for the Worldwide Church of God, why, during that same month, October 2002, why did they pick up the phone and call our representatives and offer to sell all of the writings outright? That happened in October, middle of October 2002. Now, when we got that phone call and they had talked about these astronomical, prices for the e-publishing and the annotation, and we knew about the infamous preface and all that, I mean, we didn't exactly have high hopes that they were going to negotiate in good faith. But as those negotiations wore on through October and November and December of 2002, and as that price came down, and then down again, and then down again, we were beginning to see God's working out a way for us to get all those writings. Going back to my father's statement, yes, we are going to get Mr. Armstrong's writings. Compare it with what Ralph Helge said. I don't know how else I can say it. Their only right is to stand before the bar of justice and have damages assessed. Okay, so they get the damages from us. They have the literature. We can't print them. They go and bury it like they said they would and transform by truth, and it's a done deal. So why? Why then? Such a dramatic, miraculous change. And making matters more miraculous, did you know that in the back and forth negotiations, we put the final offer before them a few days into the new calendar year, January 2003, and they called us to accept that final offer. They called us the morning of January 16th, 2003, 17 years to the day after Mr. Armstrong's death. 17 years to the day of his death, 6 years, six grueling years of litigation came to a miraculous end. The Worldwide Church of God accepted our offer. We got all the copyrights to Mystery of the Ages and all those works that we were going for in the counterclaim. All 18 works, Incredible Human Potential, The Missing Dimension in Sex, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, The Autobiography of Herbert W. Armstrong, The Armstrong College Bible Correspondence Course, and all kinds of booklets to go along with it. You know, the timing of their capitulation, that was no accident. That was a wondrous miracle, like it says in Habakkuk 1 and verse 5. What a marvelous work God's work is. What a stunning victory for such a little church, a little tiny remnant that just wanted to honor Herbert W. Armstrong and honor the work that God did through him. God gave us those writings. There were twists and turns along the way. It never quite turns out in the end exactly the way that we thought it would. But you go back to that statement from September of 2002. Yes, we are going to get Mr. Armstrong's writings. My father said that in public. It was out in the open. It was in our literature. And we got them. We got all of them. This is one of the most astonishing stories in all of church history. And if you want to read about it, if you want to study it, I'd admonish you to look into Raising the Ruins. I quoted from it earlier. That book gets into the detail, the back and forth of that litigation. Six grueling years. Right on the cover of that book, you see there, it says, "The Fight to Revive the Legacy of Herbert W. Armstrong." You see, when we honor Herbert Armstrong, when we honor God's servant, when we honor God's man, when we honor God's work, God honors us. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program and tell me a little bit about your history with God's work, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
I'm speaking to you from our television studios in Pasadena, where I speak to the world as a voice crying out in the wilderness of modern religious confusion.
Herbert W. Armstrong was the world's leading televangelist and one of the most prominent religious leaders of the 20th century. Watched, read, and followed by millions worldwide. But his legacy of Bible-based humanitarianism came under attack after he died. The cabal of leaders who took control of the church he founded, after pledging to follow in his footsteps, methodically destroyed all he had built. Those who would stop them were silenced or excommunicated. This shocking story of betrayal and deception is told in Raising the Ruins. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com.
Now he said, "This gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed or preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come."
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
throughout the Bible, God admonishes us to remember our history, to remember our roots. On today's show, we're looking back over some of the more recent history in God's church, the past 32 years in particular, since the death of God's servant, Herbert Armstrong. And he often took his readers and his listeners way back to the beginning. He often talked about the beginning of the movie and how that you can't just turn on the movie right at the end and understand everything that's going on unless you go back to how it all started. Here's an example of that from 1985. This was the last public message that Herbert Armstrong gave. Clip one.
To understand that, we have to go back to the very beginning. And I want to go through it and skip through it real rapidly. We need to have a background. You need to get the whole picture. We can get little details. You can get lost in the detail if you don't know what goes around and what's on the other side. I remember the old saying, a bear went over the mountain. He went over the mountain to see what he could see. And the other side of the mountain was all that he could see when he went over. Well, most people don't know anything except what they see immediately around them. We need to go back in time. We need to go out in space. We need to get the whole picture.
That's Herbert Armstrong in his last public message. A couple weeks after that, you can tell there he's weakening physically. He had just handed out Mystery of the Ages to the sophomore class a week before that message. Then he delivered that message on the Feast of Trumpets. And then shortly after that, he withdrew to his home, and he was confined to his home for the last 3.5 months of his physical life. But there he was during his last sermon message, talking about the need to go back to the beginning, to step back and to look at the whole picture, to go out into space even, to see what God is doing, so that we can understand. Most, as he explained there, they just look at or see what's right in front of their face. They don't go back to the beginning. They don't step back and look at the big picture. They don't see the whole picture. They just see what's right in front of their eyeballs. This is what makes history so important for us, whether it's Bible history or world history, national history, whatever it is. Paul said in 1 Corinthians, look, all these events from the Old Testament, they happen for our example and learning. They're written for our admonition. They're written to those of us upon whom the ends of the world are come. I mean, it's even more for us today than it was for those in Paul's day. He thought Christ was going to return in his lifetime. He was a little bit off on the timing. But what he wrote, what he recorded there in 1 Corinthians 10 and elsewhere, that's for us. God leaves us examples in our history. God wants us to go back and to see how this world started. How did it start in the Garden of Eden? What went wrong? And why is the world the way it is today? Why are there so many nations fighting against nations? Why is there so much evil? Why are there so many different religions with so many different beliefs and traditions and customs and doctrines? Why is there so much paganism? Why are there so many traditions that aren't even grounded in the scripture, but they're just based on human reasoning or human traditions? Well, from the beginning of the Philadelphia Church of God, you look back over these 32 years. Mr. Armstrong died in January of 1986, January 16th. A little over 3 years later, my father began work on Malachi's message. That was in March 1989. And then a few months after that, December 7th, 1989, my father was fired from the Worldwide Church of God because of what was written in Malachi's message to God's church today. And right at the start of Malachi's message, my father quotes from Malachi 3, verse 16, "Then they that feared the Eternal spoke often one to another, and the Lord hearkened and heard it, and a book of remembrance was written before him for them that feared God and that thought upon his name." We are warned to remember, as my father said at the opening page of Malachi's message. It's a warning from God. He said many prophecies about the end time discuss turning away from past instructions. Well, look here at Malachi 4. Malachi 4 and verse 4, just as one example. "Remember you the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments." God's pointing us back to Horeb or Mount Sinai, where it all began for Moses and the Israelites, where they received the Ten Commandments. God says, you better go back to the beginning. You better go back and look at how it all got started. You need to see the whole picture here. "Behold," verse 5, "behold, I will send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and dreadful day of the Lord, and he shall turn the heart of the fathers to the children and the heart of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the earth with a curse." God prophesies of one to come in the end time, in the spirit and power of Elijah. And when that man comes and goes, well, for one, we better honor him and his memory, his legacy, but we also better remember what he taught. That's why we went after all those works, Mystery of the Ages, IHP, the United States and Britain in Prophecy, The Missing Dimension in Sex. Well, it says in chapter 3, Malachi 3 and verse 18, "Then shall you return and discern between the righteous and the wicked, between him that serves God and him that serves him not." My father says this. Again, this is in the early stages of Malachi's message. He says, if we're going to be able to discern between those who serve God and those who serve him not, it will be because we remember what we were taught. The entire book of Malachi revolves around two groups: those who forget, the majority, and those who remember, the minority. Are you in that book of remembrance? Are you in the book of remembrance? My father said some years ago that it's not even enough to just study. We have to remember. What are we studying, and are we remembering it? Does it turn our hearts to God? It's easy. Even when we're studying, it's still easy to forget. It's still easy to lose sight of the whole picture. 2 Thessalonians 2, that's a chapter my father really does flesh out in Malachi's message. The chapter about the great falling away from the truth, about the man of sin leading that falling away, about a restrainer or a man that kept things back or kept the falling away from happening until he was taken out of the way. And then it talks about those who are deceived in chapter 2 and verse 10 because they didn't love the truth. Verse 13 continues, "But we are bound to give thanks always to God for you, brethren, beloved of the Eternal, because God has from the beginning chosen you to salvation, and through sanctification of the Spirit and belief of the truth." From the beginning, this was in God's mind. That's why we need to know. That's why we need to know the beginning stages of it all. Remembering is what sets us apart. Remembering God's truth. Holding on. Verse 14 says, "Whereunto he called you by our gospel, to the obtaining of the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which you have been taught, whether by word or our epistle." Hold on to what you've been taught. Don't let go of this precious history, this precious knowledge. We've got to know it. We've got to know it. My father makes a point in the former prophet's book about how history, there's enough authorities today, perhaps not as many as there should be, but there are some still who call history our most effective teacher. He refers to the example of Napoleon, who said that if you want to be a great general, you have to study the great generals of the past. You've got to study. If you want to know, you need to study the past. Then he went on to say this. These books, he's talking about the former prophets of the Old Testament. He said, these books show that if we live the same lifestyles our forefathers did, we will attain virtually the same results, good or bad. History becomes prophecy. Not all prophecy is history, but a lot of history becomes prophecy. History prophesies the fate of nations, whether they will thrive or collapse. He calls this the law of history. If we break that law, it breaks us, he said. That's how that book is introduced, by the way, The Former Prophets. The great section there at the start about the law of history. Go back and look at that. I don't want to give you too much to review here. But we need to know. We tracked down a number of clips here from this is from 2004. So this is going on 14 years old. My father, in this Key of David program, talking about the lesson of history or learning from history. It's from March 2004. Here's clip two.
Let me give you a quote from George Will, a syndicated columnist. And here's what he wrote December 23rd, 2001. When history is taught at all nowadays, often it is taught as the unfolding of inevitabilities, of vast impersonal forces. In other words, even if you have a Washington or a Lincoln, you can't really influence it. It's just overwhelming, and you really can't do anything about that vast movement of history. The article goes on to say, the role of contingency in history is disparaged. So students are inoculated against the undemocratic notion that history can be turned in its course by great individuals, taken from the Times Union. In other words, well, great men can't really turn history. Oh, they can. Well, of course, that's not what history tells us. But if we learn some lessons from history, it doesn't make any difference if you're a housewife or a corporation executive or whatever you are. It's going to have a great influence on your success in life. That's what history thunders to us time and time again, and we can lift our personal lives out of drudgery and failure. That's what these history books tell us, and why is it we're not teaching that in our colleges today? Why are we not teaching history the way we have in the past?
And there's just study after study confirming what he said there at the end of that clip. I've got a stack here. I don't even have time to get through all of it. Maybe I can cover through that, through some of that in a later show. But some going back 15, 20, 30 years ago, and then you look at the standards or lack thereof today, whether in college or high school, secondary school, whatever. In some cases, you don't need to take one course in history. Or if you do, I mean, it's the one that is taken the least seriously. Why don't we teach, whether it's in the schoolroom or at church? Why don't we teach history the way we have in the past? In the first former prophet's booklet, my father produced a smaller one many years ago. And in that one, he refers to this book about Winston Churchill, Sword and Pen, it's called. And it says here about Churchill, in attempting to assess the ultimate significance of events, Churchill grapples with the problem of historical perspective. Incidents have one meaning at the time, of their occurrence and another when they have become part of history. You see the big picture. In other words, my father then writes, many people have called Mr. Churchill a prophet. Here's the main reason. He tried to assess the ultimate significance of events in a historical perspective. My father says, all human beings are weak in this area, but we must strive to see not just the present, but also the past and the future. That's really what Mr. Armstrong was getting at in that statement. His last sermon, where he talked about going back in time, seeing the history, stepping out, I mean, looking at the universe, seeing the future, as well as the present. Mr. Churchill also said that the farther you see into the past, the farther you can see into the future. That's a truism we do well to heed. Finally, my father wrote here, well, he references 1 Corinthians 10:11. I read that to you earlier. But my father says, God left us examples in our history. They were recorded in the Old and New Testaments to educate us. But few people heed God's warnings. See, we won't heed the warnings, and so history repeats itself. Death and destruction, division, captivity, strife. Look at what we're doing to ourselves. How important is it for us to be grounded in history? Talking about the change that you see in education today. He touched on there at the tail end of that clip. Here's what he went on to say. This is clip 3.
Now, there has been a big change, and I tell you, there's been an alarming change. Why? What does it mean? Are we right today, or were we right in the past? And I'll tell you, that philosophy and that understanding and that learning history had, as I said before, had everything to do with making Winston Churchill what he was, the leader he was. And I think the very fact that we've changed and gone from one extreme to the other is one of the greatest warnings about the direction of this nation and the United Kingdom's going the same way. But you, as an individual, can learn so much from history. Churchill, this Mr. Cominger said, treated history as if it were authoritative, like there was authority in those examples. Whether they were bad or whether they were good, there were tremendous lessons to be learned. And he accepted it as authority, and it made him a great leader.
That's my father referring to that book, Sword and Pen, about Winston Churchill. And again, 1 Corinthians 10 and verse 11, which we read a moment ago, it tells us that it's there for our example. It's there for our admonition. We either learn from it, or in the case of those bad examples, we learn from it or we repeat the history. I think this next clip here is my father actually referencing that passage in 1 Corinthians 10. Here's clip 4.
So here we are, really at the end of the age, and God says, you need to learn history. I've given you all those examples. Mainly, he's talking about in the Old Testament, but also in the first 4 Gospels and the book of Acts. He's saying, look, I've given you all those examples for your admonition so that you might learn how to conduct your lives and how to be successful. Now, you personally surely want to be successful. We all have that desire. And God says, this is how you can do it. And he agrees with Winston Churchill and Mr. Cominger and William Manchester and those men like that in the importance of history and learning the lessons it has to teach us.
That's my father from 2004. I think we have time for just this one last clip where he talks about, again, the past, present, and future, the whole picture, as Mr. Armstrong said in that clip from 1985. Here's clip 5.
As I've said before and quoted Mr. Churchill, he said, the farther back you look, the farther into the future you can see. You better learn from history or you're not going to have vision. And that's how he got all that vision he had. And everybody said he was like a prophet. Where did he get that vision? From his understanding of history. You need vision in your family. I need vision. We all need vision, or we're not going to succeed in life. We're going to be brought to desolation, to ruin. We can't stand. That's just an absolute law of history.
That's the law. It encompasses more than just looking back to the beginning, but seeing the whole picture, as Mr. Armstrong said. Well, like I brought out, hopefully later on this week I can get through a little more material on this same subject. Perhaps we can tack it on to the end of a later show. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Send us emails if you like, td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. We'll see you tomorrow.